Edward III, believing he has an indisputable claim to the French crown and determined to prove he has conquered his obsession for the Countess of Salisbury, has landed in Flanders. Mounting a series of superb attacks, he drives all before him until he is eventually confronted at Crecy by the French king, John. On the evening before the battle, Edward invests his son, the Black Prince, with all the regalia of knighthood. But so that the prince may prove himself in the battle, Edward defers the actual knighting ceremony. Now, at the height of the conflict, he proudly watches his son pursue a group of fleeing French soldiers when he suddenly loses sight of him.
Son.
Rescue Artois, or is he prisoner or by violence held beside his horse?
Neither, my lord, but narrowly beset with turning Frenchmen whom he did pursue, as 'tis impossible that he should escape except your highness presently descend.
Tart, let him fight. We gave him arms today. He is laboring for a knighthood, man.
Renowned Edward, give me leave, I pray, to lead my soldiers where I may relieve your gracious son in danger to be slain.
Oddly content, I will not have a man on pain of death sent forth to succor him.
Yet, good my lord, 'tis too much willfulness to let his blood be spilt that may be saved.
Exclaim no more, for none of you can tell whether a borrowed aid will serve or no. Let Edward be delivered by our hands, and still in danger he'll expect the like. But if himself redeemed from thence, he will have vanquished cheerful death and fear, and ever after dread their force no more than if they were but babes or captive slaves.
Oh, cruel father. Farewell, Edward.
Farewell, sweet prince, the hope of chivalry.
Would my life might ransom him from death.
Soft! Methinks I hear the dismal charge of trumpets' loud retreat. All are not slain, I hope, that went with him. Some will return with tidings good or bad.
Oh, joyful sight! Victorious Edward Lee!
Welcome, brave prince!
Welcome, Plantagenet!
First, having done my duty as beseemed, lords, I greet you all with hearty thanks. And here with humble duty I present this sacrifice, this first fruit of my sword, the King of Bohem, father, whom I slew, whose thousands had entrenched me round about, yet marble courage still did under prop. And when my weary arms with often blows began to falter, straight I would remember my gifts you gave me and my zealous vow. And then new courage made me fresh again, that in despite I carved my passage forth and put the multitude to speedy flight. Lo, thus hath Edward's hand filled your request, and done, I hope, the duty of a knight.
Aye, well, thou hast deserved a knighthood, Ned. And therefore, with thy sword, yet reeking warm with blood of those that fought to be thy bane, arise, Prince Edward, trusty knight at arms. This day thou hast confounded me with joy and proved thyself fit heir unto a king.
Here is a note, my gracious lord, of those that in this conflict of our foes were slain. 11 princes of esteem, 80 barons, 120 knights, and 15,000 common soldiers, and of our men, 1,000.
Our God be praised. Now, John of France, I hope thou knowest King Edward for no wantonness, no lovesick cockney, nor his soldiers jades. But which way is the fearful king escaped?
Towards Poitiers, noble father, and his sons.
Ned, thou and Orde shall pursue them still. Myself and Artois will to Calais straight, and there begirt that haven town around with siege. Now lies it on an upshot, therefore strike, and on to Poitiers while the game's on foot.
Reveling in his new won glory, the prince, with 8,000 soldiers, follows his father's instructions and pursues the enemy to Poitiers. Overconfident in his belief that the French will be easily defeated again, the prince is lured into a trap and finds himself surrounded by 20,000 Frenchmen. At the entrance to his tent, the French King John, having just returned from observing the hopeless plight of the English troops, summons his son, the Dauphin, to him.
Come, Charles, and arm thee. Edward is entrapped, The Prince of Wales is fallen into our hands, and we have compassed him. He cannot escape.
But, Father, will you fight with him today?
What else, my son? He's scarce 8,000 strong, and we are 20,000 at the least.
I have a prophecy, my gracious lord, wherein is written what success is like to happen us in this outrageous war. It was delivered me at Cressy's field by one that is an aged hermit there.
Read it, my son.
When feathered fowl shall make thine army tremble, and flint stones rise and break the battle ray, then think on him that doth not now dissemble, for that shall be the hapless, dreadful day. Yet in the end thy foot thou shalt advance as far in England as thy foe in France.
By this it seems we shall be fortunate. For as it is impossible that stones should ever rise and break the battle ray, or airy fowl make men in arms to quake, so it is like we shall not be subdued. Or, say, this might be true, yet, in the end, since he doth promise we shall drive him hence and forage their country as they have done ours, by this revenge that loss will seem the less. But all our frivolous fancies, toys, and dreams. Once we are sure we have ensnared the son, catch with the father after how we can.
Audley, the armies of the French encircle us, and so the arms of death embrace us all.
This sudden, mighty, and expedient head that they have made, fair prince, is wonderful. Before us in the valley lies the king. His party stronger battled than our whole. His son, the Dauphin, Duke of Normandy, hath trimmed the mountain on our right hand up. On our left hand, Philip, the younger issue of the king. Behind us, too, there at our backs are lodged the fatal crossbows. And the battle there is governed by the rough Chatillon. Then thus it stands. The valley for our flight the king binds in. The hills on either hand are proudly royalized by his sons. And on the hill behind stands certain death in pay and service with Chatillon.
Death's name is much more mighty than his deeds. Thy parceling this power hath made it more. As many sands as these my hands can hold are but my handful of so many sands. But if I stand to count them sand by sand, the number would confound my memory and make 1,000,000,000 of a task, which briefly is no more indeed than one. These quarters, squadrons, and these regiments before us, behind us, and on either hand, why, all this many, Audley, is but one. And we can call it all but one man's strength. He that hath far to go tells it by miles. If he should tell the steps, it kills his heart. The drops are infinite that makes a flood, and yet thou knowest we call it but a rain. There is but one France, one king of France, and we have one. Then apprehend no odds, for 1 to 1 is fair equality.
What tidings, herald? Be thou plain and brief.
The Dauphin of France, my lord and master, pitying thy youth is so ingirt with peril, by me hath sent a nimble-jointed donkey, as swift as ever yet thou didst bestride, and therewithal he counsels thee to fly, else death himself hath sworn that thou shalt die.
Back with the ass unto the ass that sent him. Tell him I cannot sit a coward's horse. Bid him today bestride the jade himself. For I will stain my horse quite o'er with blood, and double gild my spurs, but I will catch him. So tell the carping boy and get thee gone.
I go.
How confident their strength and numbers make them. Now, Audley, show thy time's learning in this dangerous time. Thou art a married man in this distress, but danger woos me as a blushing maid. Teach me an answer to this perilous time.
To die is all as common as to live. The one in choice, the other holds in chase. For from the instant we begin to live, we do pursue and hunt the time to die. If we then hunt for death, why do we fear it? If we fear it, why do we follow it? If we do fear, how can we shun it? If we do fear, with fear we do but aid the thing we fear to seize on us the sooner. If we fear not, then no resolved proffer can overthrow the limit of our fate. For whether ripe or rotten, drop we shall as we do draw the lottery of our doom.
Ah, good old man. A thousand armors these words of thine have buckled on my back. I will not give a penny for a life, nor half a halfpenny to shun grim death, since for to live is but to seek to die, and dying but beginning of new life. Let come the hour when he that rules it will. To live or die, I hold indifferent.
A sudden darkness hath defaced the sky. The birds cease singing, and the wandering brooks murmur no wonted greeting to their shores. Silence attends some wonder, and expect that heaven should pronounce some prophecy. Where or from whom proceeds this silence, Charles?
Our men with open mouths and staring eyes look on each other, as they did attend each other's words, and yet no creature speaks.
And now the under-earth is as a grave, dark, deadly, silent, and uncomfortable. Hark! What a deadly outcry do I hear?
Here comes my brother Philip.
All dismayed! What fearful words are those our looks presage?
A flight! A flight!
Coward, what flight? Thou liest! There needs no flight!
A flight!
Awake thy craven powers, and tell on the substance of that very fear indeed, which is so ghastly printed on thy face. What is the matter?
A flight of ugly ravens do croak and hover o'er our soldiers' heads. With their approach there came this sudden fog, which now hath hid the airy floor of heaven, and made it known a night unnatural upon the quaking and dismayed world.
Aye, now I call to mind the prophecy. But I must give no entrance to a fear. Return, and hearten up these yielding souls. Tell them, the ravens, seeing them in arms, so many fair against a famished few, come but to dine upon their handiwork and prey upon the carrion that they kill of those poor English that are marked to die. Away, and comfort up my soldiers, and sound the trumpets, and at once dispatch this English prince, Black Edward, in a trice.
How fares your grace? Are you not hurt, my lord?
No, dear Audley, but choked with dust and smoke and stepped aside for breath and fresher air.
Breathe then and tooth again. The amazed French are quite distracted with gazing on the crows. And were our quivers full of shafts again, your grace should see a glorious day of this. Oh, for more arrows. Lord, that's our want.
Courage, old man. A fig for feathered shafts when feathered fowls do bandy on our side. What need we fight and sweat and keep a coil when railing crows outscold our adversaries? Up, up, and look! The ground itself is armed with fire-containing flint. Order our archers to hurl away their pretty colored bows and to it with stones. Away, Audley! Away! My soul doth prophesy we win the day!
Our multitudes are in themselves confounded, dismayed and distraught. Swift starting fear hath buzzed a cold dismay through all my army, and every petty disadvantage prompts the fear-possessed abject soul to fly. Myself, whose spirit is steel to their dull lead, what with recalling of the prophecy and that our native stones from English arms rebel against us, find myself attainted with strong surprise of weak and yielding fear.
Fly! The French do kill the French. Some that would stand let drive, and some that fly. Our drums strike nothing but discouragement. Our trumpets sound dishonor and retire.
Pluck out our eyes and see not this day's shame. An arm hath beat an army. One poor David hath with a stone foiled 20 stout Goliaths. Some 20 naked starvelings with small flints.
have driven back a puissant host of men arrayed and fenced in all the company.
This day hath set derision on the French, and all the world will blurt and scorn at us.
But is there no hope left?
No hope but death to bury up our shame.
Make up once more with me. The 20th part of those that live are men enough to quail the feeble handful on the adverse parts.
Then charge again. If heaven be not opposed, we cannot lose the day.
Now, John in France, and lately, John of France, and you, high-vaunting Charles of Normandy, that once today sent me a horse to fly, are now the subjects of my clemency. Fie, lords, is not a shame that English boys, whose early days are not yet worth a beard, should in the bosom of your kingdom thus, 1 against 20, beat you up together?
Thy fortune, not thy force, have conquered us.
An argument that heaven aids the right.
Good friends, convey me to my lord the prince.
Alas! What 1,000 armed men of France have writ that note of death in Audley's face? My arms shall be thy grave. What may I do to win thy life or to revenge thy death?
Victorious prince, if I could hold dim death but at a bay, till I did see my liege, thy royal father, this soul should yield this castle of my flesh, this mangled tribute, with all willingness to darkness, consummation, dust, and worms.
Cheerly, bold man. Thy soul is all too proud to yield her city for one little breach, to be divorced from her earthly spouse by the soft temper of a Frenchman's sword. Come, gentlemen, I'll see my friend bestowed within an easy litter. And then we'll march proudly toward Calais with triumphant pace unto my royal father. And there we'll bring the tribute of my wars, fair France's king.
The English are triumphant. Not only has the prince decisively beaten the French at Poitiers and captured their king, but his father has also finally secured the surrender of Calais. Standing on the beach with his wife, Queen Philippa, Edward watches as 6 of the town's leading citizens are dragged before him, their clothes in rags, ropes around their necks.
We take possession of your town in peace, but for yourselves, look ye for no remorse. But as imperial justice hath decreed, your bodies shall be dragged about these walls and after feel the stroke of quartering steel. This is your doom. Go, soldiers, see it done.
Be more mild unto these yielding men. It is a glorious thing to establish peace, and kings approach the nearest unto God by giving life and safety unto men. As thou intendest to be king of France, so let her people live to call thee king. And what the sword cuts down or fire hath spoiled, be held in reputation none of ours.
Philippa, my queen, we yield to thy request. These men shall live to boast of clemency.
Long live your highness. Happy be your reign.
Go, get you hence, return unto the town. And if this kindness hath deserved your love, learn then to reverence Edward as your king. But who comes here? Woodstock, my son. What news? What? Have our men the overthrow at Poitiers?
Down in a valley, both the armies lay. The French had cast their trenches like a ring, and in the midst, like to a slender point within the compass of the horizon, as 'twere a rising bubble in the sea, or as a bear fast chained unto a stake, my brother Edward stood, still expecting when those dogs of France would fasten on his flesh. Anon the death-procuring knell begins, the battles join, and when we could no more discern the difference twixt the friend and foe, away we turned our watery eyes, with sighs as black as powder fuming into smoke. And thus, I fear, unhappy have I told the most untimely tale of Edward's fall.
Ah, me! Is this the welcome into France? Is this the comfort that I look to have when I should meet with my beloved son? Sweet Ned, I would thy mother in the sea had been prevented of this mortal grief.
Comfort thyself as I do, gentle queen, with hope of sharp, unheard of, dire revenge. He bids me to provide his funeral, and so I will. But all the peers in France shall mourners be and weep out bloody tears until their empty veins be dry and sear. The pillars of his hearse shall be their bones, the mould that covers him their city's ashes, his knell the groaning cries of dying men, and in the stead of tapers on his tomb, 150 towers shall burning blaze while we bewail our valiant son's decease.
Rejoice, my lord! Ascend the throne of France! The mighty and redoubted Prince of Wales, great servitor to bloody Mars in arms, the Frenchman's terror and his country's fame, triumphant, rideth like a Roman peer, and lowly at his stirrup, comes afoot King John of France, together with his sons in captive bonds, whose diadem he brings to crown thee with and to proclaim thee king.
Away with mourning, wife. Wipe thine eyes. Sound trumpets. Welcome in Plantagenet.
Oh, thrice noble son, be this a token to express my joy. For inward passions will not let me speak.
And now, my lord, I render to your hands these prisoners chief occasion of our strife.
So, John of France, I see you keep your word. You promised to be sooner with ourselves than we did think for. And 'tis so indeed.
Tell me what ransom thou requires to have.
Thy ransom, John, hereafter shall be known. But first to England, thou must cross the seas to see what entertainment it affords. Howe'er it falls, it cannot be so bad as ours hath been since we arrived in France.
Accursed man. Of this I was foretold, but it misconstrue what the prophet told.
Now let me prophesy. The crown of France, which lately thou didst wear in usurpation of my father's right, is now restored unto its lawful place. And future ages shall this anthem sing, Long live King Edward! France's royal king!
But the prophecy is to prove untrue. Within a few years, Poitiers is recaptured by the French, and not until Henry V's great victory at Agincourt are the glorious days of Crecy and Poitiers to be revived. In 1376, the Black Prince dies, and his son, Richard, is declared heir to the throne. A year later, following the death of Edward III, Richard is king.
Arrivat, 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 in Carlo Secundus. Secundus!
He immediately surrounds himself with a circle of sycophantic young friends, and, echoing the behavior of his great-grandfather, Edward II, he clashes violently with his three uncles, the surviving sons of Edward III. So bad has the situation become that during a private dinner party attended by two of his uncles, John of Gaunt and Edmund the Duke of York, a plate is suddenly thrown to the floor and Gaunt leaps onto his feet crying,
Lights! Lights! Bring torches, knaves! Shut all the gates! Now, by the blessed saints, I fear we're poisoned all.
Poisoned, brother? God for thy mercy. Would our cousin king so cousin us to poison us in our meat?
Has no man here some helping antidote for fear already we have ta'en some dram? What think'st thou, Cheney? Thou first brought'st the tidings. Are we not poisoned, think'st thou?
Fear not, my lords. That mischievous potion was as yet unserved. It was a liquid bane dissolved in wine, which, after supper, should have been caroused to young King Richard's health.
Good, i' faith. Are his uncle's deaths become health to King Richard? How came it out? Sir Thomas Cheney, pray resolve us.
A Carmelite friar, my lord, revealed the plot, and should have acted it. But touched in conscience, he came to your good brother, the Lord Protector, and so disclosed it, who straight sent me to you.
A heavy charge, good Woodstock, hast thou had, to be protector to so wild a prince, so far degenerate from his noble father, whom the trembling French the Black Prince called, not of a swart and melancholy brow, but that he made so many funeral days in mournful France. The warlike battles won at Crecy Field, Poitiers, Artois, and Maine, made all France groan under his conquering arm. But heaven forestalled his diadem on earth to place him with a royal crown in heaven. Rise may his dust to glory. Ere he'd have done a deed so base unto his enemy, much less unto the brothers of his father, he'd first have lost his royal blood in drops, dissolved the strings of his humanity, and lost that livelihood that was preserved to make his unlike son a wanton king.
Forbear, good John of Gaunt. Believe me, brother, we may do wrong unto our cousin king. I fear his flattering minions more than him.
By the blessed Virgin, noble Edmund York, I'm past all patience. Poison his subjects! His royal uncles!
Sir Thomas Cheney here can tell the circumstance. Pray give him leave.
Well, let him speak.
'Tis certainly made known, my reverend lords, to your loved brother, to the good protector, that not King Richard, but his flatterers, Sir Henry Green, joined with Sir Edward Bagot, and that sly Machiavel, Sir Thomas Scroope, had all great hands in this conspiracy.
My blessed Mary, I'll confound them all.
Patience, good Lancaster. Tell me, kind Cheney, how does thy master, our good brother Woodstock, plain Thomas... For by the rood, so all men call him, for his plain dealing and his simple clothing.
Faith, my lord, his mind suits with his habit, homely and plain, both free from pride and envy, and therein will admit distrust to none. And see, his grace himself is come to greet you.
Why, how now, brothers? How fares good John of Gaunt?
Oh.
That vexed, I know. Thou grievest, kind Edmund York. Yet do not do so. Afore my God, I swear King Richard loves you all, and credit me, the princely gentleman is innocent of this black deed and base conspiracy. Speak! Speak! How is't with princely Lancaster?
Sick, Gloucester, sick. We all are weary, and fain we would lie down to rest ourselves, but that so many serpents lurk in the grass. We dare not sleep.
Enough, enough. Good brother, I have found out the disease.
Huh?
When the head aches, the body is not healthful. King Richard's wounded with a wanton humour, lulled and secured by flattering sycophants. But 'tis not deadly yet. It may be cured. Some vein let blood where the corruption lies, and all shall heal again.
Then lose no time, lest it grow ulcerous. The false base Scroope and Green and Bagot too run naught but poison, brother. Spill them all.
They guide the non-age king. 'Tis they protect him. You wear the title of protectorship, but like an under-officer, as though yours were derived from theirs. Faith, you're too plain.
In my apparel, you'll say.
Good faith in all.
Peace, peace. Tomorrow is the solemn nuptial day betwixt the king and virtuous Anna Beam, the emperor's daughter, a right gracious lady that's come to England for King Richard's love. Then, as you love his grace and hate his flatterers, discountenance not the day with the least frown. Be ignorant of what ye know. Before my God, I have good hope this happy marriage, brothers, will mildly calm his headstrong youth to see and shun those stains that blur his majesty. If not, by good King Edward's bones, our royal father, I will remove those hinderers of his health, though it cost my head.
On these conditions, brother, I agree.
And I.
To hide our hate is soundest policy.
And, brother Gloucester, since it is your pleasure to have us smooth our sullen brows with smiles, we'd have you suit your outside to your heart, and like a courtier, cast those country clothes for which the coarse and vulgar call your grace by the title of plain Thomas. Yet we doubt not tomorrow we shall have good hope to see your high protectorship in finery.
For your sakes, brothers, and this solemn day, for once I'll sumpter a gaudy wardrobe, but 'tis more than I have done, I vow, these 20 years. Afore my God, the king could not have entreated me to leave this habit. But your wills be done. Let's hie to court. You all your wishes have. One weary day, plain Thomas will be brave.
As the crowds gather in the background to welcome the king and his new bride to their wedding reception, two of Richard's friends are desperately trying to calm Sir Henry Green, who has just discovered that their plot to poison Gaunt and York has misfired.
Nay, good Sir Henry, King Richard needs us all.
Prithee, sweet Green, forsake these passions and attend the king.
S'blood, I am sore vexed, so scroop mad me not. Thyself and I and Bagot are undone, our plot's revealed. Black curses seize the traitor.
Eternal torments whip that Carmelite.
Death seize him. Had the poison ta'en effect on Lancaster and Edmund, Duke of York, the third brother, plain Thomas, the protector, had quickly been removed. But since 'tis thus, our safeties must be cared for, and 'tis best to keep us near the person of the king.
So shall we still, so long as Richard lives.
Bagot and Green, next to the fair Queen Anne, take your high places by King Richard's side, and give fair welcome to our queen and bride. Uncles of Woodstock, York, and Lancaster, make full our wishes and salute our queen. Give all your welcomes to fair Anne Abeam.
Sweet queen and cousin, now I'll call you so, in plain and honest phrase, welcome to England. Think they speak in me, and you have seen all England cry with joy, God bless the Queen. And so, afore my God, I know they wish it. Only I fear my duty not misconstant.
Uncle.
Nay, nay, King Richard, for God I'll speak the truth. Sweet Queen, you found a young and wanton choice, a youth unsettled, yet he's princely bred, descended from the royalist bloods in Europe, the kingly stock of England and of France, yet he's a harebrain, a very wag, i' faith. But you must bear, madam. Lass, he's but a blossom. But his maturity, I hope you'll find true English bred, a king loving and kind.
I thank ye for that double praise, good uncle.
Aye, aye, good cuz, I'm plain Thomas. By the rood, I'll speak the truth.
My sovereign lord, and you, true English peers, your all-accomplished honours have so tied my senses by a magical restraint in the sweet spell of these, your fair demeanours, that I am bound and charmed from what I was. My native country I no more remember, and having left the earth where I was bred, and English made, let me be English yet. they best shall please me, shall me English call. My heart, great king, to you. My love to all.
Gramercy, man, thou highly honest me.
And blessed is England in this sweet accord.
Aye, aye, aye. I swear, good uncles, York and Lancaster, when you this morning came to visit me, I did not know my uncle in those robes. You have much grace the day. But, noble uncle, I did observe what I have wondered at. As we today rode on to Westminster, we thought your horse, that's wont to pace the ground, today trotty as slow and melancholy as if his legs had failed to bear his load.
And can you blame the beast? Before my God, he was not wont to bear such clothes as these. 100 oaks upon these shoulders hang to make me brave upon your wedding day, and more than that, to make my horse more tired. 10 acres of good land are stitched up here. You know, good cuz, this was not wont to be.
In your plain hose, uncle?
No, nor his woolen coat, neither.
mock on my plain hose, say ye. Plain hose? Did some here wear that fashion, they would not tax and rob the common so.
Soot, he forewarned us and will break out himself.
No matter.
We'll back him, though it grows to blows.
Scoff ye my plainness. I'll talk no riddles. Plain Thomas will speak plainly. There's Bagot there, and Green.
And what of us, my lord?
Upstarts! Come down. You have no places there. Here's better men to grace King Richard's chair, if please him grace them so.
Uncle, forbear! Why is our Lord Protector so outrageous?
Because thy subjects have such outrage shown them by these thy flatterers. Let the sun dry up what the unwholesome fog hath choked the ground with. Here's Arundel, thy ocean's admiral, hath brought thee home a rich and wealthy prize, ta'en 60 sail of ships and 6 great carracks, all richly laden. Let those goods be sold to satisfy those borrowed sums of coin their pride has forced from the needy commons. To salve which inconvenience, I beseech your grace, you would vouchsafe to let me have the sale and distribution of those goods.
Our word, good uncle, is already past, which cannot with our honour be recalled. Those wealthy prizes already are bestowed on these, our friends.
On them.
Yes!
Who storms at it?
Shall cankers eat the fruit that planting and good husbandry have nourished?
Cankers?
Aye, cankers. Caterpillars.
Worse than consuming fires that eat up all their fury falls upon. Once more, be still! Who wist the dares encounter with our will? We did bestow them. Hear me, kind uncles. We shall ere long be past protectorship. Then will we rule ourselves. And even till then, we let you know those gifts are given to them. We did it, Woodstock, and to those slight gifts not worth acceptance. Thus much more we add. Young Henry Green shall be Lord Chancellor, Bagot's Lord Keeper of our Privy Seal, and Scroop, learned in our kingdom's cost, shall be our treasurer. By them and their directions, King Richard will uphold his government.
Change no more words, my lord. You do deject your kingly majesty to speak to such whose homespun judgments, like their frosty beards, would blast the blooming hopes of all your kingdom. Were I as you, my lord,
Gentle Green, throw no more fuel on, but rather seek to mitigate this heat. Be patient, kingly Richard, quench this ire. Would I had tears of force to stint this fire.
Beshrew the churls that make my queen so sad. But by my grandsire Edward's kingly bones, my princely father's tomb, King Richard swears we'll make them weep these wrongs in bloody tears. Come, fair Queen Anne Abeam, Bagot and Green, keep by King Richard's side. But as for you, we'll shortly make your stiff obedience bow.
Remember this, my lords. We keep the seal. Our strength you all shall know.
And we are Chancellor. We love you well. Think so.
Before my God and holy saints, I swear, but that my tongue hath liberty to show the inly passions boiling in my breast, I think my overburdened heart would break. We presently recall a parliament, where, if by fair means we can win no favour, nor make King Richard leave their companies, we'll thus resolve, for our dear country's good, to right her wrongs, or for it, spend our blood.
About it, then, and summon Parliament.
Thus shall King Richard suit his princely train, despite his uncle's pride. Embrace me, gentlemen. Sir Edward Bagot. Bushy. Green. And Scroop. Your youths are fitting to our tender years, and such shall beautify our princely throne. Fear not my uncles, nor their proudest strength, for I will buckler ye against them all.
Sweet king, set courage to authority, and let them know the power of majesty.
May not the lion roar because he's young? What are your uncles but as elephants, and set their aged bodies to the oak? You are the oak against whose stock they lean. Fall from them once, and then destroy them ever. Be thou no stay, King Richard, to their strength, but as a tyrant unto tyranny, and so confound them all eternally.
Dearest Scroop, thou art our treasurer. Resolve us, therefore, what thou thinkst of them that under title of protectorship seek to subvert their king and sovereign.
As of the king's rebellious enemies, as underminers of his sacred state, which in the greatest prince or mightiest peer that is a subject to your majesty is nothing less than treason capital. And he a traitor that endeavours it?
Yes. Take them then, arrest them and condemn them.
Hell them to the block and cut off all their heads. And then King Richard claim the government.
See it be done, Scroope, speedily.
That course is all too rash, my gracious lord.
Too rash for what?
It must be done with greater policy, for fear the people rise in mutiny.
Aye, there's the fear. The commons love them well. But time shall come when we shall yoke their necks and make them bend to our obedience. Oh, no, what reads thou there, Scroope?
The monument of English chronicles of all your famous predecessor kings.
What findest thou of them?
Here is set down, my princely sovereign, the certain time and day when you were born.
Our birthday, sayest thou? Is that noted there?
It is, my lord.
Prithee, let me hear it. For thereby hangs a secret mystery which yet our uncle strangely keeps from us.
Upon the 3rd of April, 1365, was Lord Richard, son to the Black Prince, born at Bordeaux.
Stay! Let me think a while. 1365. What year is this?
'Tis now, my lord, 1387.
By that account, the 3rd of April next, our age is numbered 22 years. Oh, treacherous men that have deluded us. We might have claimed our right a 12 months since. Shut up thy book. Good, Bushy, Baggeth, Green. King Richard and his throne will now be seen. This day I'll claim my right, my kingdom's due. Our uncles well shall know they but intrude, for which we'll smite their base ingratitude.
A message for the king from Parliament.
A messenger from Parliament, my liege.
Admit him. Speak.
The peers of England now are all assembled and humbly crave your highness would be there to sit in council touching such affairs as shall concern your country's government.
Have they so soon procured a parliament? Without our knowledge, too. Mm. 'Tis somewhat strange. Yet say we will meet them straight.
My liege.
Yes, we will meet them. But with such intent as shall dismiss their sudden parliament. Come, sirs, to Westminster. Attend our state. This day shall make you ever fortunate. The 3rd of April, Bushy. Note the year.
I am of age. The crown and kingdom's mine.
Now, Brother York, what says King Richard, huh?
His highness will be here immediately.
Pity King Richard's youth, most reverend uncles, and in your high proceedings, gently use him. Think of his tender years. What's now amiss, his riper judgment shall make good and perfect to your and to the kingdom's benefit.
Alack, sweet queen, you and our lord the king have little cause to fear our just proceedings. We'll fall beneath his feet and bend our knees so he cast off those hateful flatterers that daily ruinate his state and kingdom.
May heaven direct your wisdom to provide for England's honor and King Richard's good.
Believe no less, sweet queen. Attend her highness.
The king is come, my lords.
Why, how now, uncle? What? Disrobed again of all your gold and rich habiliments?
Aye, good cuz. I am now in my plain hose. I am now myself, plain Thomas. And by the rood in these plain hose, I'll do the realm more good than these that rob the poor to jet in gold.
Well, good uncle, these your bitter taunts against my friends and me will one day cease. But what's the reason you have sent for us?
To have your grace confirm this parliament and set your hand to certain articles most needful for your state and kingdom's quiet.
Where are those articles?
The states and burgesses of the parliament attend with duty to deliver them.
Please you ascend your throne, we'll call them in.
We'll ask a question first, and then we'll see them. For trust me, reverend uncles, we have sworn we will not sit upon our royal throne until this question be resolved at full. Reach me that paper, Bushy. Hear me, princes. We had a strange petition here delivered us. A poor man's son, his father being deceased, gave him in charge unto a rich man's hands to keep him and the little land he had till he attained to 21 years. The poorer venue amounts but to 3 crowns, and yet the insatiate churl denies his right and bars him of his fair inheritance. Tell me, I pray,
Will not our English laws enforce this rich man to resign his due?
There is no let to buy it, gracious sovereign. For my God, sweet prince, it joys my soul to see your grace in person thus to judge his cause.
The poor man then had wrong, you all confess.
And shall have right, my liege, to quit his wrong.
Then, Woodstock, give us right, for we are wronged. Thou art the rich, and we the poor man's son. The realms of England, France, and Ireland are those three crowns thou yearly keep'st from us.
Was this the trick, sweet prince? Alack the day. You need not thus have doubled with your friends. And yet I think I have not wronged your right. For if the times were searched, I guess your grace is not so full of years till April next. But be it as it will. Lo, here, King Richard, I thus yield up my sad protectorship. A heavy burden hast thou ta'en from me. Long mayst thou live in peace and keep thine own, that truth and justice may attend thy throne.
Then, in the name of heaven, we thus ascend. And here we claim our fair inheritance of fruitful England, France, and Ireland. Here, uncle, take the crown from Richard's hand, and once more place it on our kingly head. This day, my lords, we will be new enthroned.
With all our hearts, my lord. Long live Richard!
Vivat! Vivat!
We thank you, all. And now King Richard rules. We shall elect and choose, place and displace such officers as we ourselves shall like of. And first, my lords, because your age is such as pity twere ye should be further pressed with weighty business of the common weal, we here dismiss ye from the council table, and will that you remain not in our court. Deliver up your staves of office.
Here, take my staff, good cousin. York thus leaves thee. Thou lean'st on staves that will at length deceive thee.
There lie the burden of old Lancaster. And may he perish that succeeds my place.
So, sir, we will observe your humor. Sir Henry Green, succeed our Uncle York. And Bushy, take the staff of Lancaster.
What transformation do mine eyes behold? As if the world were topsy-turvy turned. Hear me, King Richard.
King Thomas, I'll not hear you.
You do not well to move his majesty.
Heads, flatterer, or by my soul I'll kill thee. Shall England, that so long was governed by grave experience of white-headed age, be subject now to rash, unskillful boys?
We'll hear no more! Give up your council staff!
My staff, King Richard. Seek us. Here it is. This staff hath always been discreetly kept. Nor shall the world report an upstart groom did glory in the honours Woodstock lost. And therefore, Richard, thus I sever it. There. Let him take it. Shivered, cracked, and broke. As will the state of England be ere long by this rejecting true nobility.
Come, York. Let's leave them too.
Aye. Your pleasures are supplied sufficiently.
Old doting greybeards. For God, my lord, had they not been your uncles, I'd broken my council staff. About their heads!
We'll have an act for this. It shall henceforth be counted high treason for any fellow with a grey beard to come within 40 feet of the court gates.
I own a great belly doublet. We'll alter the kingdom presently.
Pugsons will not have a beard amongst us. We'll shave the country and the city too, shall we not, Richard?
Do what you will. We'll shield and buckle ye.
We must have money to buy new suits, my lord. The fashions that we wear are gross and stale.
Then Scroope to counsel and devise some new, and fashion money for our wants and joys. You see, fair Anne, that Richard now is king.
Though I am Richard's queen, I meet sad hours and wake when others sleep. Distressed poverty o'erspreads his realm, and my sweet Richard must the blame accept that dost allow his strutting flatterers to gild themselves in others' miseries.
Good health, sweet princess.
Saw'st thou King Richard, Cheney? Prithee tell me, what revels keep his flattering minions?
They sit in council to devise strange fashions and suit themselves in wild and antic habits. French hose, Italian cloaks, and Spanish hats. Polonian shoes with peaks a handful long, tied to their knees with chains of pearl and gold. Their plumed tops fly waving in the air a cubit high above their wanton heads. And Thomas Scroop with Richard likewise sits devising taxes and strange shifts for money.
Oh, certain ruin of this famous kingdom! Woe to those men that thus incline thy soul to these remorseless acts and deeds so foul.
Now, Anne of Beam, how cheers my dearest wife? Come, lift thy looks. Sweet Anne, be not so grave. Leave graves for grey beards, whom we soon shall shave.
In episode 4 of Vivat Rex, the cast was as follows. The storyteller, Richard Burton. Edward III, Keith Michell. Richard II, Derek Jacobi. Artois, Neville Jason. Audley, John Turner. The Black Prince, Christopher Neame. King John of France, Ronald Lewis. Charles the Dauphin, Geoffrey Collins. Philip, Steve Hodson. Queen Philippa, Jeanette Stirk. Thomas of Woodstock, Nigel Stock. Lancaster, Michael Redgrave. Duke of York, Clifford Rose. Cheney, Geoffrey Siegel. Scroop, Paul Meyer. Baggett, Sean Probert. Green, Christopher Good. Bushy, Nigel Lambert. And Queen Anne, Anna Calder Marshall. Music composed by Christopher Whelan. Produced and directed by Jerry Jones.